Medical Matters on Talk About, brought to you in association with the Bon Secours Hospital Tralee, celebrating 100 years of advanced medicine and exceptional care.
Now, a very warm welcome to Dr. Eamon Shanahan, who joins us from Farran Four. How are you, Eamon?
Deirdre, isn't it a glorious day?
Isn't it just? And I always ask you this when we get prolonged good weather. People don't seem to be sick as often, or is that still the case?
It's true.
All quiet in the surgery?
Not quiet, but quieter.
Quieter than it would be. This is it, yeah. Amazing too, isn't it, the psychological lift that good weather gives us.
I think it does. It does give people a great boost. I mean, I think, to be fair, one of the things is that a month ago, 6 weeks ago, definitely we would have been seeing lots of people, especially children, with coughs and colds. Now that the weather has improved, when people are beginning to move out and away from each other, they all disappear. And that's the normal cycle that has always been the case. So it's a great break for everybody, but it's wonderful for the parents as well.
Absolutely. Now, today I asked you as a topic if you would discuss the HPV vaccine, and I know that it's something you're very passionate about. And at the moment, of course, a lot of schools are being visited by someone from the HSE who is administering the HPV vaccine to first years. Yeah. And of course, it's now available to boys as well as girls. Will we go right back to the very beginning, Eamon, and just tell us about what this vaccine is and what it does?
Okay, so the human papilloma virus is a common virus. In fact, there are, I don't know, it's 100 different types of HPV, some of which are completely innocuous. The vast majority of which are, in fact, are completely innocuous. But it has been known for quite some time that there are a number of so-called high-risk types of human papilloma virus. And high-risk because they're associated with cancers. Now, I think it's important to stress that while people associate it with cervical cancer, the reality is that it can also be associated with cancers of the anus, the vagina, of the mouth, of the vulva, and of the penis. So, I mean, like, the thing is, I'm looking at statistics here in front of me. The virus itself is responsible for about 4.5% of all cancers worldwide. So it's a common cause of cancers. And the important thing is that, unlike many other cancers, the thing is that we have a mechanism here whereby if we can help make people immune to the virus, then we would substantially reduce the likelihood of those people, male and female, and that's really important, developing cancers in the future.
Okay, and how long has this virus, or how long has this vaccine been available?
The vaccine originally became available, I'm guessing, around the 2010s or that way. I haven't got the figures actually in front of me at this minute, but I know that over the last couple of years they've been gradually rolling out a couple of things. Firstly, a vaccine that would have covered 2 or 4 of the high-risk types of HPV, and the current vaccine, it covers 9 types of the vaccine. And as you said quite rightly, it's being administered not just to girls, but the boys also. In fact, just as citizen theory started September 2010, I should say.
And why is it being given to first years, those around the age of 13?
The whole point of the exercise is that, and I need to be careful about this one, it's not a sexually transmitted infection, but it is transmitted by means of sexual contact. And so the thing is that the levels of the virus are exceedingly low in that age group, in the people 12-13, and that it starts to rise quite rapidly from the teen years onwards, the middle teens onwards. And the idea is to get the vaccination in, to get the immunity into the virus before people actually contract the virus.
And what's the uptake like, Eamon? By and large, do the majority of children get it?
The honest answer is I don't know. And the reason I'm saying that is because it's our colleagues in the public health services that administer this through the school's health service. My understanding is, anecdotally, is that most people are indeed getting the virus at this stage. And interestingly, one of the groups that are looking for it are teenagers themselves. My understanding is that the uptake is reasonable, but I can't give you exact figures for that.
Okay, but anecdotally, the uptake has been pretty good, I'd imagine.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, the thing is that the vaccine, which is at this stage on the go, and all forms of vaccination have been available for 13 years. The current vaccine that's being used is available for the last 4 years, so it was there before COVID. They, like all vaccinations, people can get a sore arm from it. A fever can happen, and people can get some short-term, as in like within a day or two, that it can get headaches, dizziness, nausea, fatigue. But these are, as I said, generally resolved within a day or two. One of the things that's important is that the vaccinations are administered either sitting down or lying down, just in case people feel a bit woozy after it. But there is really no evidence of any significant association with this vaccine and other conditions. I think it's important to bear in mind that just technically the vaccine is not the virus itself. You can't get the human papillomavirus from the vaccine. It is there are proteins which are exactly the same as the surface proteins on the virus. So it gives high levels of immunity, which do seem to sustain for many years without exposing the person to the actual virus itself.
Okay, and now having said all that, though, a few years ago, I remember there was some controversy about it, and there was a lobby group set up, including here in Kerry, of people who had major concerns about it, and there were claims made that of young people who got all sorts of unusual side effects. What would you say to that?
So I'll read a statement. There is no scientific evidence for a causal association between the HPV vaccine and any long-term medical conditions, including chronic regional pain syndrome, postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome, known as POTS, or chronic fatigue syndrome. And I'm aware of the fact that there would have been people who have had concerns about the vaccine, but in truth, there is no evidence that there's any connection with the vaccination and any of these. Now, I know there are people going to disagree with that, but that's the science.
Okay, so we'll say you would recommend, we'll say, to your own patients that this is the way to go to get the vaccine.
You will probably remember, Deirdre, I couldn't understand for the life of me why girls only were getting the vaccine and not the boys.
Yeah, you've said that a number of times, yeah.
And now boys and girls are getting it, because the logic has always been there from the get-go. The reality is that we are seeing, obviously cervical cancer is a huge problem, but we are seeing a rise in rates of things like penile cancers and what we call oropharyngeal cancers of the mouth and throat, and these rising, and they're all related to the HPV. In those countries that are ahead of us, and even though we will have to continue to do cervical screening for many decades to come, the reckoning is, for example, in Australia, where they're ahead of us in this regard, the likelihood is that they will have virtually all but eradicated cervical cancer in the next 20 years.
Okay, and we know as well about our sadly very, very poor record regarding cervical cancer here in this country and the various scandals.
Yeah. And what we need to do is take away the cause of this thing in the first place. And in 99% of cases where a woman has cervical cancer, there will be a HPV, that the virus will be present.
Has there been a little bit of confusion, a muddying of the waters? Because I have heard people say, well, you know, I don't want my son or my daughter to become promiscuous, and this is kind of almost insinuating before they become sexually active that they're going to have multiple partners. But you're, from what you're saying, that's neither here nor there.
Yeah, I mean, the reality is, and I mean, I think, okay, there are undoubtedly the individuals who either never have or only have ever have only one partner, but that's not what is happening in the population at large. And we want to try to eradicate the virus. It's like all viruses. Ideally, what you want to do, you want to achieve the smallpox a phenomenon, which is, if it's possible, you want to eradicate the virus completely. By doing that, you do national, whole of population-based vaccination campaigns to eradicate the virus.
So ultimately, like the long-term effect of this will be that in years to come, we should see nobody practically getting cervical cancer, especially in that age cohort anyway.
And not just cervical cancer.
But the other cancers you mentioned.
As well. Absolutely. Absolutely. And that is the whole thrust of this vaccination campaign. Now, I think it's important to bear in mind that while the target group are the children 12 and 13, there are catch-up campaigns, and there's the Laura Brennan campaign to try to arrange for girls and boys in fifth and sixth year to get catch-up vaccinations. Even up to age 25, there's still benefit. Even in women and men who have the virus present, It may not completely protect them, but it will provide some measure of protection even if they get vaccinated later. But the earlier, before the person is exposed to the virus, you can get them the vaccine, the more effective it's going to be.
Okay.
By the way, it's worth bearing in mind that for the 12 and 13 year olds, it's a single shot confers the immunity. For the older children, the ones, the later teens, it's two shots, typically about 6 months apart.
Okay, so if you're somebody, we'll say, in their 30s or 40s who never had the opportunity to get it when you were in secondary school, there's probably no point in getting it now.
It depends. There is, again, we're straying into a slightly technical area, but let's put it this way, up to age 25, there certainly is benefit. There will be certain small subgroups of society, those who are likely to develop HIV, who, as a separate infection, who are at increased risk to the cancerous effects of HPV, and for those groups of people, the vaccine is offered up to age 45.
Okay, that's interesting. Eamon, so anybody out there whose son or daughter, who wants to get the vaccine for their son or daughter, they don't really need to do anything because it all happens through the schools, I presume.
Through the schools, exactly, absolutely. I mean, indeed, what they do try to do is they do try to provide catch-up. So for some reason, on the day that the public health people do call, and if for some reason somebody's absent, they will try and arrange for the vaccination to be done elsewhere at a different time. Again, it's through our public health colleagues that this campaign is administered, and they would be the people, the local public health office will be able to advise you about that.
And it's administered by a nurse within the school during the school day?
That's exactly it. That's it, as I understand. That's the situation, exactly, yeah.
Yeah, and I presume as well also that there's an opt-out, that no one's obviously forced to get this vaccine, and if anyone doesn't want...
Exactly, and that's the case. That's very much the case in Ireland, though, of course, we would encourage everybody to get the vaccine.
Okay.
I would certainly encourage everybody to get the vaccine.
Okay. Do you think people are still aiming a little bit hesitant about vaccines? Because all that needs to happen is one person to hear something somewhere about somebody who got an alleged reaction to a vaccine, and that can stick in their head.
Yeah, I mean, this has been a problem for, I'm in practice nearly 37 years, and as long as I'm in practice, this has been an issue. I mean, we're going back to the original 3-in-1 vaccine and the MMR and so on and so forth, and so there are concerns. I suppose all we can do is provide people with information. Also, what we would do is do our best to speak to people about their concerns and worries and try to help them to understand that the risks involved are exceptionally low. Are there no risk? No. There's no such thing as no risk, but the risks are exceedingly low. With this vaccine, as well as along with so many other vaccines, the benefit vastly outweighs the any potential disadvantages. The reality is that what we should aspire to, dear guys, is we should aspire to a state, a condition where our children are not at risk of these cancers.
Absolutely. Well, Eamon, we'll take a quick break, and we have some questions for you, and we have some general queries as well. And just to remind listeners, if you have any queries for Eamon of a medical nature, we'll prioritise any questions you might have about the HPV vaccine. Maybe you have some concerns about your son or daughter getting it. I know that certainly schools in the Tralee area are being visited at the moment by the nurse from the HSE to administer the vaccine. So if you have any queries or questions or doubts in your mind about it, why not ask Eamon? He will do his very best to answer your question comprehensively. 083 300 3300. We'd love to hear from you.
Medical Matters on Talk About, brought to you in association with the Bonsecour Hospital Tralee, celebrating 100 years of advanced medicine and exceptional care.
You're very welcome back. We're talking to Dr. Eamon Shanahan. It's Medical Matters, and today's topic is the HPV vaccine. Eamon, a listener says, my daughter got 2 out of the 3 injections. She missed the third one many years ago. Should she be concerned?
Yeah. Okay, so there is, again on the HSE website, and I'm just going from this, my understanding is that 2 should be sufficient. In the HSE website, if you go to immunisation.ie, because that's the source of all this information, and if you go to the public information section, there is a section there on the Laura Brennan HPV catch-up vaccination programme, And as I understand it, you get the second vaccination and that should be sufficient. Now, I'd have to look at the detail to be absolutely certain. But as I said, the information is readily available on the HSE website.
Now, a listener from Listowel says, if I decide not to let my daughter have the vaccine, what's the worst that can happen?
She can get cervical cancer.
Okay.
That's the problem.
Yeah.
That's the problem. Like, you know, I mean, it's kind of black and white, really. The reality is that not every person who has HPV will get cervical cancer, but 99% of women who have cervical cancer have HPV. There's a very, very, very strong association between the two. Now, ideally, eventually we will see the virus being eradicated, and maybe the day will come when we won't need to vaccinate people. But the reality is the cervical cancer is still a significant problem. And the thing is, we're still seeing significant numbers of women who are getting cervical cancer all the time. And again, I keep saying we must not forget the male cancers as well. So the thing is that by giving the vaccination and ideally targeting the 12 and 13 year olds, we would then very substantially reduce the risk of those people, girls and boys, developing cancers in the years to come.
All right, we've more questions coming in for you of a general medical nature, Eamon, if that's okay. And just to remind listeners, we will prioritise the HPV vaccine questions. But for now, though, a listener wants to know, Eamon, what are the do's and don'ts if you have a slip disc in your back?
Do keep active. Do keep active. That's probably the main advice. You see, the problem is that the traditional advice, and this, to be fair, you were talking about 10 and 20, 30 years ago, was if you had slipped your disc, you were to rest your back. And it's been clearly shown that that's not a good thing. To the extent that it's possible, to the extent that you can continue to keep mobile, that's really important. The difficulty is that if you take too much rest, the muscles in the back will weaken further and only prolong the problem. Most back problems will eventually resolve themselves. 99% of them resolve themselves. And this is one of those places where talking to a physiotherapist would be a huge benefit. So the do's are, do keep active and do talk to a physio.
Now, a listener is giving out to Eamon. Are you ready for this? A listener says, last week Eamon said he thinks supplements and vitamins are a waste of time. I just want to say that I take my vitamin B and my magnesium supplement and I would be a nervous wreck without both of them. I think it wasn't a fair statement by him.
Yeah, and the problem is the evidence is and the science shows that the supplements actually don't make any difference at a physical level. Now, there are lots of people who are taking supplements and they feel they're getting great benefit from them, and I have no objection to people taking the supplements. I'm just saying that the evidence for they're actually making a difference in those people who are not vitamin deficient is not there. In other words, by all means, take the supplements if you want, absolutely, but there is no evidence that it's actually going to make any great difference.
And you've always advocated, Eamon, in all the years I'm working with you, you always say a balanced diet should provide you with all the vitamins you need anyway.
Absolutely.
And minerals.
And I think, the probably the big changes that are happening diet-wise is that people are increasingly moving towards a plant-based diet. Yes, I'm not saying that people should become vegetarian, but I'm saying the thing is that particularly in a coastal county like we have, and I know that there is issues of price and all the rest of it, and food poverty is a real issue, but like the thing is that to the extent that it's possible to have a balanced diet, which includes all the major food groups, without excess, without too much emphasis on any one single food group.
Now, back to vaccines again, but a different vaccine. A texter says, does Dr. Eamon recommend the new COVID booster vaccine for the over 70s?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, the problem is COVID hasn't gone away, and that's the problem. And it's still a miserable dose. A colleague of mine texted me yesterday, and they're not going to be able to come into work for the next week or two because they have COVID. And they're just in miserable. Now, the good news is that the number of people that I'm aware of who are dying directly as a result of COVID is getting less and less. But it does mean to say that people can be significantly disabled. And one of the issues and one of the concerns we have is that, okay, so what's, you know, the long-term COVID and this kind of stuff? People after viral infections can be very disabled. So anything you can do that's going to reduce your risk of developing COVID is to be welcomed, and absolutely, definitely. And I'm going to continue to get the vaccine as long as it's available.
Now,
a
couple of COVID or a couple of heat related questions, Eamon, weather related. We have a lady from Killarney who's 70. She says, I can't take the heat. I always wear a straw hat when I go out, but I seem to get a very bad headache. Should I take a tablet or suffer on?
you can always take paracetamol. There's never a problem about taking paracetamol, but probably the bigger problem is one of dehydration, that people get relatively dehydrated, and it's not just the loss of fluids from the body, it's loss of salt from the body as well too. All that sweat contains a lot of salt, and people can feel quite weak if they lose salt. What might be worthwhile, even though it's fairly yucky stuff, is to take the likes of the diorolites or something like that, which will give you back the salts you're missing, and that might help rejuvenate you.
Another weather-related one, we have a listener who says, is it okay to give an antihistamine to a 12-year-old who really suffers with hay fever? And if so, can I give it to her every day during this period of good weather?
Yes, very much so. 12 and over, for the most part, we treat as adults in terms of medications. Now, there are one or two of the antihistamines that are available for younger children as well. And the source of information for this would be your local chemist. They're the people who can advise you about that. But absolutely, I mean, and that's a fair point, because particularly coming into the exam season as well too, we've got people who are destroyed with hay fever. I'm seeing lots of people with hay fever, small children with blocked up noses and all the rest of it. And part of the treatment of that is using antihistamines.
And the other listener mentioned about getting a headache from the sun. Can that be part of hay fever as well, a kind of a sinusy headache?
Oh yeah, absolutely. People are completely stuffed up. I've seen a couple of poor kids in the last couple of days. Oh my God, you should see the inside of their noses. They can hardly breathe because the inside of their noses are so swollen and inflamed. And it's no wonder then that the adults get that. They're going to get headaches as a consequence because they're completely stuffed up.
Yeah, this is it. Listener says, will you ask Eamon about diverticulitis? I'm on a second antibiotic and I'm still bleeding from the back passage.
Yeah, of course the doors. Yeah, I mean, like, the thing is that an affliction of Western society and related to our diet or our lack of roughage in the diet, the problem is that if you have the diverticular disease, if you have diverticulitis, the difficulty is that you have to wait for the darn thing to settle itself down. The antibiotic is there to try and reduce the inflammation. Exceptionally rarely where people have really, really severe diverticular disease and they get repeated bouts of infection, but it's typically over years, eventually the surgeons will say enough of this and they'll actually remove that section of the disease.
Yeah, okay. Eamon, we're going to leave it there because I know that you're a busy man and we got through quite a few questions. But
back to work.
Back to work for you and back to the programme for me. But listen, thank you for giving us some great advice there, particularly about the HPV. And we will put this up as a podcast as well for anyone who wants to listen back. Eamon, I hope you get some time off to enjoy the sunshine.
The next weekend, please God.
Please God. All the best. Bye-bye.
Take care.
That's Dr. Eamon Shanahan there with this week's Medical Matters. And as I said, we will put up a podcast of this segment because even if you didn't catch it live, maybe you know somebody that has questions or concerns about the HPV vaccine and they can always listen back to it. Very simple to listen back to a podcast from Talk About. All you do is go on to our website, radiokerry.ie, click on podcasts at the top of your screen and then click on the Talk About logo and you should be able to follow it from there.